Welcome to the Botcast, featuring Nigel Bottrell. The Botcast is an Entrepreneur's Circle production, exclusively for EC members.
Hey, Botcast time! Oh, the nights have drawn in. Remember, the 5th of November, which is hard when it's still September. That almost rhymed. We are putting the November Botcast together. Unusually early. We're not normally this well prepared, but I have with me today a fairly well known member of the EC, who's been part of the Entrepreneur Circle for heading on for a couple of years now, and he happens to be in the vicinity on this particular day, and so I asked him if he would could he spare me half an hour or so to have a little chat on the Botcast. So I want to let's give it up and welcome another Botcast virgin, Andy Solomon from Yomdell.
Hello, Nigel. And the first thing I'm going to say is that actually it's Yomdell, not Yomdell.
Okay.
And a lot of people make that mistake. But interestingly, how do you pronounce Yomdell. Yodel? Do you say Yodel?
Yodel.
Yodel.
Okay. So it's Yomdell.
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 Okay, Yomdell. That's Yomdell. Yomdell. I can get that right.
Yomdell.
Yomdell. Okay.
A family of Yomdells.
Okay. Y-O-M-D-E-L.
That's correct.
Is it a made-up word?
It is. It's all my fault. I created it. It was a part of the process when we started the company that what I wanted to be able to do was to have a .com domain, but with a word.
Yes.
And the more you looked, there were just no words there.
Yes.
So everything had been taken.
So
everything. And I was going round and round and round and round. And eventually I started playing with the idea of calling, because that was what the business was going to be doing, live chat on websites, digital engagement. And I got to Yodel, but then realised that was a delivery company of somewhat suspect reputation. I didn't really want to be associated with that. And then came to the sound from communication.
Okay.
And Yomdell emerged.
There's more to this than I realised.
Yeah, and then I did a Google search for Yomdell, and it came up with a big fat zero.
Okay.
No results in any language.
So it was a word that you literally did just make up yourself?
I made it up.
Okay.
I made it up.
Interesting.
I was quite surprised, because sometimes you can make up a word, and then as you dig into it, you actually find it's something offensive in another language somewhere in the world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've got to be so careful.
Yes,
you know?
What does Yomdell mean in Mandarin? Okay.
There's a slight postscript, though, which I will add, which is a couple of years after we started Yomdell, a Yomdell, or Yomdell, actually, emerged.
Right.
And Yomdell was the phonetic version of a singer's name in Cambodia.
No.
A Khmer singer who goes under the name of Yomdell.
So we've
checked out his music, and unfortunately it's not actually something we'd like to put alongside anything we do. But there is a connection to be made there at some point.
Okay,
I
do feel sure. Where do you hail from?
Originally born in Bristol, but spent many years in London.
I knew you were a southerner. Because had you been a Yorkshireman, I feel sure it would have been pronounced Yomdell. I feel sure it would.
Well, I can't argue with that.
So we're going to talk. Andy's business is very, very interesting. And in particular, the story of... Because how old is the business now?
Well, it was originally started in 2012, but actually took off in 2014. That was the proper launch with Anger.
All right. So it's two and a bit years old, properly.
Yeah.
And you've had three rounds of funding?
We've had two rounds of funding.
Okay, sorry, beg your pardon.
Yeah, two.
Okay. And very interesting how, because within EC, we've got all sorts of businesses, all sorts of different industries and markets. But interesting to hear from you today, come from kind of fairly close quarters, someone who has effectively launched what is a technology-based business because of what you do, and has had to go through some of the things that we normally only read about. And so that's why I was keen to get you on here. So before we just get into any detail, we better just explain what Yomdell actually does. Okay, so your customers are all B2B.
They're all B to, well, yeah, we sell to companies, but those companies might be selling to consumers or selling to other businesses.
But your customers, people that pay you, are other businesses.
Absolutely.
And you are providing, explain the service that you, it's very, very interesting is this, and it's quite a unique service you provide.
Well, simply put, it's 24/7, fully managed, fully staffed live chat. So our live chat operators are sitting there, virtually, behind the scenes, on our client websites, and as people come through those websites, whatever time of day or night, they are then seeking to engage with those people.
Yeah.
So they will push invitations to them, try to target them based on their behavior, on their perceived interest, whether they've maybe abandoned a page and gone somewhere else. So we try to find out when someone has a question or when someone is likely to want to find out a little bit more.
Because live chat has been around for a long time. I mean, you didn't invent live chat.
No.
But one of the big challenges for most businesses, once you've put live chat on your website, is of course responding to it.
Yeah.
And as a business owner, and I know because I've been there, even though, you know, I bought the technology, plugged it in, made it look great, got the designer on it, all pops up in the right way, but then how do I know when my staff are actually going to respond? And this for me was the kind of masterstroke that you guys have solved, because you've taken away from the individual businesses the responsibility of being online and handling the live chat, because you are always there to take it. And what we should also talk a little bit about is, like everything in life, in truth, but live chat is a skill. And there are techniques and strategies that make it much more effective, because you've got to balance the strike between being, you don't want to be too intrusive or too forceful with the live chat, but equally neither do you want to be too passive. And there are certain phrases and words that work well. When you do anything multiple times and you live and breathe it, it becomes your business, you become a lot better at it. And so that's what Yondl does. It provides that service, and your clients vary from very small businesses.
Yeah.
Some quite big ones.
They're from very small, sort of, you know, almost sort of one man or one woman band businesses, through to national brands. You know, we're particularly strong in the property sector.
Yes.
Which has the largest group really of our clients.
Estate
agents in the UK, some abroad as well, but mainly in the UK. And of course, our relationship with the EC actually comes from one of those clients.
Yes, it does, from YouMove.
Which is YouMove. Yeah. And of course, as we know, YouMove a couple of weeks ago had some wonderful news.
Well, it's a couple of months ago by the time people hear this.
Of course.
Because it's only September.
It is.
And this isn't going out until November.
Okay, well, yes, a couple of old hat now. We all know about this.
Try and remember. Try and help preserve it. So just to explain, so for estate agents, for like YouMove, what service, what do you do for them? Because you sit on their website.
So well, you identified the key thing about live chat. I mean, live chat is really, really easy to put on your website.
Yeah.
And it has the capability to bring human interaction online. Real people can speak with real people, but in the digital world, it helps that digital customer experience. But the key challenge is that people will come onto your website when it suits them. The web, digital, is the great democratizer.
Yeah.
The individual is empowered
to
do it in the way that they want to do it, at the time of their pleasing, in the way of their pleasing. And so a lot of businesses, when they try to do live chat themselves, fall over. So that's simple.
Yeah, for the reasons that I talked about.
Exactly. I mean, if there's a delay in responding, or even worse, no one is available, leave a message.
Well, the worst thing is when it says they're available and they're not.
And they're not.
When you actually type something in and there's no one there to respond.
Well, there's one worse than that, which I've experienced with one particular business, where it says that they're there, you go through, it doesn't say they're not available, it says this license has expired.
Oh no.
Because it's so difficult for companies to operate it, eventually they give up.
Yeah.
And they forget it's there.
Yeah.
But of course, their customers are still finding it from time to time.
Yeah.
And we take that pain away.
Okay.
So for estate agents, to go back to the question, for an estate agent, their core business is in selling and letting houses, property. They make their money from the people who are selling, not from the people who are buying. And they make their money from the landlords, not from the tenants.
Yes.
So the key thing for our estate agent clients is to try to identify and capture as many inquiries as we possibly can from those people which are going to bring potential for revenue
yes.
into their businesses.
Okay.
Now, of course, along the way, a buyer comes onto a website, and a buyer quite often will also be a seller. Mm-hmm. So it's another opportunity to nudge that mm-hmm. potential sales valuation inquiry through to our client business.
And I know Titan to Glenn at Yuma, when they first started using it, because it was them that introduced them, you to me, as it were, or you, yes. Yondel yeah. to me. And they were genuinely surprised at the time of day. They were getting people on their website browsing property in the middle, literally in the middle of the night at like 4 a.m, because you've got people on night shifts and you've got parents with wakeful children, yep. little babies and stuff, and they're online looking at this, and they're able to respond. And because when these people respond at that time of the day, and they get an actual life, it's really a real life person. I mean, they're blown away. In
it's a real wow.
So, well, it's a big differentiator.
Absolutely, it's a huge wow. And we see 50% of everything that we do on all of our client websites, irrespective of the sector, whether it's property, we also work in finance, automotive, travel, yep. whatever it is, even the hardest of hardest core B2B propositions, invoice financing.
Okay.
50%.
Yes.
Outside of ours.
Yeah. And because when you start to think about it, it's kind of obvious because that is when people are doing
yeah.
that sort of stuff, isn't it?
But then you look at, why are people using live chat? Now, what's changed? I mean, as we said earlier, Nige, you asked when I started the company, I said 2012, and yeah. then it only really launched in 2014. In 2012, we were a bit early to market. That's the truth.
Okay.
But then what changed, the critical thing that changed between 2012 and 2014 was that live chat emerged as something that people recognised, that they could see.
Yes.
So they would go onto their mobile yes. telephone, their TalkTalks, O2, Sky Broadband, yes. their bank, the utilities, whatever it was,
yes.
and suddenly there was live chat.
Yeah.
And it was an answer to a problem of having to deal with these dreadful phone answering services, where you're interminably yes. put on hold,
yeah, yeah.
or you've got
yeah.
someone with a really thick accent, you can't understand what they're saying, there's this yes. huge kickback against call centres, overseas call yes. centres,
yeah.
and live chat partly solved that problem. The other thing, critical thing which came in, was smartphones and the massive adoption of smartphones. And suddenly people had in their hands a device which lent itself perfectly to live chat.
Yeah.
So we see again about 40% probably of all of the chats we handle are on mobile.
Okay.
It could be someone commuting, coming home on the train, and they're chatting on their phone without disturbing people around them, and they go into a tunnel.
Yeah.
It come out the other end, it reconnects seamlessly. There's no break.
Yeah.
So behaviours have changed. People are used to short messaging,
yes.
whether it's texting,
yeah,
whether it's true. Snapchat or
yeah.
Twitter
oh,
or
yeah,
Facebook,
WhatsApp,
whatever
yeah.
it is.
Okay.
So all of these things have changed. But for smaller businesses to offer this as a service, for the reasons we've mentioned, it's almost impossible.
Yeah.
Now, there is a really, really important question. And this is a very common question.
I love it when the interviewee
yeah.
is also the interviewer. This is fantastic. I love it when people bring their own questions. So tell me, Andy, what is the important question?
You made me forget now. No, the important question is simply that any self-respecting business owner
yes.
wants to be absolutely certain
yes.
that whoever is representing their business
yes.
is doing it effectively,
yes.
that their brand is protected,
yes.
that their values are protected,
yes.
that their business is protected,
yeah.
and indeed grows.
Yeah.
And so the key question is, how do I know? How can I trust you guys at Yondel to be able to represent my business in a way that I'm going to feel secure?
So how
and trust
can
them?
I trust you guys at Yondel to...
Because
represent
it's,
my business.
It's about identifying where the line is.
Okay.
In the same way as you hire staff to sit in your office or hire staff to sit
yes.
virtually or remotely,
yes.
wherever they may be,
yeah.
and those people are working to your standards, your instructions, your requirements,
yes.
Yondel is the same. We have a lot of experience in developing very detailed what we call knowledge banks.
Yes.
So we'll build a huge sort of library of information because we know the kinds of questions that people are going to ask. We're handling thousands and thousands of chats every month. So
yes.
we see all of these questions and actually
yes.
across all sectors, it's almost the same questions. How much is it? How long will it take? What happens if I don't like it? It's these kinds of things that come up all of the time.
Yeah.
But you have to then apply them
yes.
to the business that
yes.
you're representing.
Yeah.
Now, there is, of course... a cut-off point beyond which you're getting into expert advice
yes.
and expert questions.
Yeah.
And of course, from our perspective and from our client's perspective, quite simply put, that is a referral opportunity.
Yes, okay.
That
yeah,
is,
yeah.
I can help you to this point.
Yeah.
I'm your first line of contact.
Okay.
I'm your virtual receptionist, if you like.
Yeah.
I'll qualify you, take you, say, yes, we can help you.
And then
but
pass you on
you need
to
speak to my colleague
okay.
who will be able to
So these kind of, well, they're not standard questions, are they? But these regular, frequently asked, the things that you're coming through. So you work with the businesses that you're working with in the beginning to establish and agree
on an ongoing basis
what the right kind of questions are. And as things come up, you refine those and work them through. So, but who is actually answering all these? Who's doing all these chats, Andy? And how on earth do you handle this 24/7? Where are the people?
So we have our main office is in Sussex, in a little place called Billingshurst.
Okay.
Which was a lifestyle choice when I started the company. I thought, I don't need to commute anymore, so I'm going to put the office down the road.
Yes.
Exactly what I did. Now, you know, we have our senior supervision team sits there, our management team, and other top
functions. The senior supervision team.
The operation, the ops team.
Okay.
But they're the guardians of quality.
Okay.
They're the ones that each client will have someone within that team that's given to them, who is their main point of contact. But then beyond them, our actual operators who are doing the keying, the tip tap chatting.
Couldn't actually see that. It's only an audio recording.
If I do that, then you can probably hear that.
That causes a lot of interruptions with people now. Bumped their cars because that, yes, that's right.
Sorry so about that.
People that are typing.
At least I cut my nails.
People that are typing very fast and answering these chats, where are they based?
They're based in Asia.
Okay.
Now for the smallest company that we handle, I mean, our minimum fees are very, very low.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it works out that a very small company could have 24/7 fully staffed live chat where people are responding to their visitors within 15 or 30 seconds and it costs them 7p an hour.
Right, okay.
7p an hour. You can't do very much for 7p an hour. And certainly if we were to staff that in the UK, we wouldn't be able to charge 7p an hour.
No, sure.
It would be quite a large multiple in that. So because we are working with text-based communication, there is no accent. And my background is a journalist. My operations director, Simon Townsend, his background is a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And we are actually quite pedantic about language, about trying to make sure that the engagements follow a very carefully structured process. They're natural, conversational, they're professional, but they're geared to a success, to an outcome which is designed to meet the definition of success that we agree with our clients. What does a successful lead look like? What does a successful engagement look
and that
like?
Will be different for different businesses and different types of service. So so you're guiding the chat towards those resolutions. Because again, it's like no different to any other kind of conversation. You know, you can influence where it goes.
You can
take it on chat and can and can pull that through. And so do people actually pay then by the hour?
No, they pay by the lead.
Okay,
now that's by the lead.
And that for me was when I first came across you guys and Glenn introduced me. That for me was one of the really interesting things about what you've done, because that starts to get really interesting now. So I only actually pay when, and a lead is when you give me some contact details, some of the people on my website. Now that becomes really interesting at this point. So now you're not only dealing with a customer service kind of challenge of the 21st century. In other words, how do I fulfill live chat and provide, you know, an enhanced and a better user experience to people on my website 24/7, recognizing that lots of people are accessing it out of hours, etc. But you then turn that and only get remunerated when you turn those visitors into genuine kind of leads. So so typically a lead would be a name and some contact information.
It depends on the requirements for the client. I mean, some of our client businesses will have different services of you know, from very low value through to high value.
Okay.
Now a lead for a low value service to them, you know, they're not going to it's be too expensive for them.
Yes.
So we target very carefully and try to remove those or funnel those in another area.
So like with the estate agents then, for instance, because obviously someone that actually buys a house triggers a reasonably chunky payment to the estate agent.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll get people that are looking to buy typically.
Yeah.
And so you would get their contact details, etc.
We get the name, we get the contact details. If they're selling a house, we'd get the full postal address.
Yes.
We'd look at their requirements. If they're buying, if they've got a finance in place, a mortgage, etc. What areas they're looking at. If there's a particular property they're interested in, setting up a viewing for them. Lots of different things that we would do. But if you're thinking about the kind of returns that customers, our clients, can get.
Yes.
I'll just share. I won't name the estate agent. It's not YouMove. But they signed up earlier this year, and late last year. In their first three weeks of service, in their first month, they received 100 leads. Of those leads, there were 15 sales valuation requests in there, and some other things, some landlords and some buyers and some other bits and bobs. That cost them £1,000.
£1,000?
Yeah, cost them £1,000. Okay. Now, of those 15 sales valuations...
Is that because?
It was £10 a lead.
Thank you. That's right. That's my maths, yes.
The pricing for property is slightly lower than other sectors. This, I can easily to explain. So from that £1,000 that they spent, they got 15 sales valuations in that first 3 weeks. So come the end of the month, they had worked seven of those sales valuation leads.
Yeah.
They had secured instructions on three of them.
Right.
Two of them had gone under offer the first day on the market.
Oh, wow.
The third one had yet to be listed.
Yeah.
And they still had another eight to visit and complete. So their ROI, just on those three sales that they got, well, two that they sold, was already £8,000.
Yeah, wow.
£7,790, actually. So they were on an eight times ROI, and they had dealt with less than half of the haul in their first 3 weeks.
Yeah. So you started to build this business, and you've got this. How many people have you got in it? Can you give us an indication?
We have about 10 people in Sussex, and then the number of operators that are working with us is increasing all of the time.
Yeah,
I think the current count is around about 70, but there's another chunk in recruitment currently. So
70 in September could be 90 in November.
Indeed, yeah, indeed, indeed.
Okay,
indeed.
So and so you recruit them and you train them.
Yeah,
and they are. Obviously, I know they're overseas, but that's still a lot of staff and a lot of costs, and you're building this business.
Yes.
And you've got infrastructure and software and all sorts of things that you've had to develop here. Yeah. So let's just talk about the other side of this business and how you've grown this in terms of the funding and things, because you're a good example of someone that has kind of started with a fairly clear picture of where you're heading and the end in mind, and you know, you can be as open or not as you want to be. I'm not going to put you under pressure, but you always, when you started Yondl, you did already have a clear right at the very beginning of where this might lead to.
Yep.
So you were building something that you're going to build it and grow it with a view to some kind of exit.
Indeed,
in the medium
That's
term.
Right. Yeah.
But to build it and grow it, you've got to invest, because as I say, you need all the software, you need the people, you've got to build an operation here. You've got customers coming on board that are paying you, whether it's 10, 15, 20 pounds a lead or whatever the tariff is, but the money's coming in the beginning, especially because you've gone into sectors that have worked better than others and things, so lots to discover.
Yep.
So you had to get some funding. So how did you approach that then? What options did you look at? What worked? Mm-hmm. How did you actually get Yondl moving?
Well, the very initial phase was self-funded.
Mm-hmm.
I exited from my previous role as a journalist and publisher, put a chunk of money into Yondl, and it all went.
Okay. Yes.
Many business owners will understand that story.
A few of us can relate to that. Yeah.
And at some point, the wife is sort of saying, my wife is saying, well, you really, draw a line in this somewhere. But anyway, we persevered. We knew we had something, myself and my business partner, Tim. So our first round of funding really was important to get us kind of beyond the point of it just being the Andy and Tim show, to actually start to bring in some more people that we needed support. We needed to extract ourselves, and myself especially, needs to extract myself to be much more of a kind of ambassadorial, but work on growing the business as opposed to shoveling inside the business.
Yeah, and again, that was because that's quite a difference between a lot of EC members, and I think that comes from, I don't want to put words in your mouth here, but it does come from having that clarity of where you are heading, because you had to build a business that had a large degree of independence from you, didn't you?
Absolutely.
So where were the first hires? What part of the business were they in?
The first hire, well, the first round of funding, I should explain how that happened very quickly. I've always been a quite keen sort of networker. Mm-hmm. You know, I think the power of the network, but the what can I do for you type network, as opposed to what can I sell to you type network.
Yes.
You know, so I've always had that as a journalist. I would, that was my job to spend time with people, and you know. Yeah. So within the network, you know, we realized that the first step was to raise some money, but to do it through people that we trusted, and also to find people that we could, that could come into the business and give us some experience as well as some money.
Okay.
To actually contribute to what we're doing.
Yeah.
So we actually went out for $100,000.
Okay.
We were introduced to someone who was a deal maker. He lived quite locally.
Yeah.
Through the network. He went out and brought in a couple of guys, and one of them was is now our chairman, and he is a guy called Martin Hess, and he was one of the very senior executives at HP, Hewlett-Packard.
Okay.
And Hewlett-Packard went through a split and the creation of Hewlett-Packard Enterprise last year. He's now he's now left HP earlier this year, but he came in together with another business owner, a very successful IT business called OCSL, a guy called Tim Thrower. They came in for less than we were actually looking for. We got $60,000.
Okay.
The guy who got us the deal, he was given a few points.
Okay. Yes.
That was his fee. We didn't, you know, we didn't have any money to pay a finder's fee and that kind of stuff. So they came, those three came in, and immediately Martin especially started really making an impact.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, he would just insert me into places in the nicest possible way. Yeah, as an example, you know, I would be a guest at the Prince's Trust annual ball in the Hilton Park Lane, and I would find myself sitting next to the head of Google Business UK.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Okay. Yes. You know, very helpful.
And then through the rugby network as well, there's a lot of connections through there, also through Martin, you know, which has been very, so that really helped us. So with that first tranche of money that came in, that enabled us to hire Simon Townsend.
Okay,
and
yes.
And those of you in the EC who are Yomdal clients, thank you, by the way, you will know Simon.
Yes.
Simon is our operations director. Yep. He is tremendously hardworking. Nothing is ever too much trouble. He's obsessive about Yomdal in the way that we all are. And it's, you know, sometimes it's unhealthy, but it's all very focused on getting us to where we need to get us. So that then gave us the starting point to be able to start to accelerate the growth. And I was able to step back a little bit and then focus on acquisition, business acquisition. Simon was then focusing on the delivery.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I couldn't do both.
Yeah.
Because I was doing
both
before. Yeah. And that took us through 20, so that was the end of 2014. So through 2015,
yes,
we were cash generative. Yeah. We were acquiring new businesses all the time. The EC side of things was very much part of that as well, part and parcel of that. We learned a lot along the way. We lost some clients. We gained it, but we gained far more than we lost.
Yeah.
And some of our early clients are still with us to this day and very, very happy. And, you know, and become friends as well as clients, which is great. But we made a mistake in 2015, I think.
Okay.
And my business partner, Tim, I think would also agree with this, is that we were growing very fast, and we wanted to go for a second round
of funding.
Funding. We needed more money in the business. If we were going to achieve our scale, the scaling up, the step changes that we needed to achieve in order to get to our exit goals.
Yes.
You know, in the future.
Yeah.
But we were growing at such a rate that we felt we can't stop and fix a valuation, because these were all all aspirational valuations. There was no profit in the business, because every single penny that came in was being reinvested. Yes. We're paying ourselves diddly squat.
And presumably you're growing staff numbers all the time.
Staff numbers growing all the time. Overheads growing. Revenue growing. Everything growing. But we delayed the round.
Okay.
Because we were worried that we'd undervalued. Yes.
Right. Okay.
We should. It slowed us down by 6 months. At the end of the day.
Okay, because you were having to be tight with cash.
Yes.
And whereas if you'd had the cash, you could do stuff.
Absolutely.
And this is an interesting point, because there are a lot of businesses in EC that are completely self-funded and are hamstrung in their ability to do the right things to grow because they haven't got the cash, because that they are undercapitalized. Now, you at least have gone out there and got some external funding. You were starting to make some progress. You were getting traction. I mean, I remember having some conversations with you during last year. You know, there was a lot of good stuff going on. The Yomdal name was getting more and more well known, especially in Yorkshire, Yomdal. And you know, but you were making, you know, serious penetration into some of the market sectors. So it was interesting to hear you talking more recently about you on reflection that you you waited too long last year. Yeah. And it's a kind of a natural thing, because obviously when people are looking to come into a business, they're going to invest some money, they're going to get some shares. So the number of shares they get is as a percentage. That's based on the valuation of the business. You're on a growth curve, so if we can get a few more customers, the business is more valuable, so we get the money for less equity. So it's a kind of natural kind of tension there, isn't there? But you went out then last year, and you say 6 months later than you wish you had.
Yeah, this year, in 2016, but we undernarred over different routes to money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course we tried the banks.
Right.
Got absolutely nowhere.
Okay.
I think the final straw was when I will name the bank, NatWest. When three NatWest executives came and visited us.
Oh yeah.
And finally agreed to give us a £1,500 overdraft facility, because we have a zero overdraft facility. And then as they left, they put a stack of papers about an inch thick that had to be signed. I'm too busy growing the business to worry about this.
Okay.
It was absolutely astonishing. So actually then looking at, okay, funding. So we thought about crowdfunding.
Yes.
We thought that crowdfunding would be great for us because it would give us lots of publicity.
Yes.
Because we thrive off publicity. We're very lucky, I think, with Yondall, that we have a lot of what I call Yondall love. People like being associated with
us. Yes, I can see that. Yeah, yeah.
And I love it. It's hugely satisfying on one level, but I like the recognition that brings, because we're doing something that I genuinely believe is doing good for our clients. But then we thought, well, you can have loads and loads and loads and loads of investors, you know, putting £5 each in or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, what value are they going to bring the business?
Yes.
So then the next one was, okay, we could go and look at some more institutional stuff, venture.
Yes.
VCs.
Yeah.
And we looked at those, and then the fees that were going to be charged and all this kind of stuff. We could have raised the money, but we balked at the fees, and of course there was an upfront ingredient that would also needed to be paid there in order to pay these guys to go and get bring these people in and bring them back. So hesitate.
Mm-hmm.
So then we thought, okay, we'll go out for another private round, which is what we did in the first one, and we brought in the guy who had helped us in the first round again.
Yeah.
We agonized over what the valuation should be. We were looking at one figure, but then we dropped it.
Okay.
We dropped it from 4 million down to 2.5 million.
The valuation,
which is based on a multiple of revenue,
right? Okay,
not profit.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have any profit, still don't. The goal then was to lower it in order to bring in more people, who could actually help us.
Okay, so you were looking not just for the money, although that was important.
Yeah.
You needed the money, but you wanted people that came with the money who would be able to introduce and help and get involved.
Yeah, who brought in business experience, who brought in networks, who brought in, so we've ended up with this tremendous panel of advisors.
Oh, okay, so how many people came involved in the second round?
Let's count them up. 1, 2, 4, 5, I think.
Okay,
something
like that. And it was Martin Hess that found that?
No, it was the guy who found Martin was the guy.
Ah, beg your pardon.
We brought in. We've got the guys, the chairman of Sussex County Cricket Club came in.
Okay.
As a shareholder, OCSL, which is the company owned by one of our original shares, not Martin, but the other chap.
Okay.
One of his partners, who's the head of sales, and another of the sales, have both come in. And they're bringing in a sales accelerator type program for us.
Nice.
So they've got all of that expertise.
Mm-hmm.
An old friend of mine out in Asia, who has experience in telecoms and IT, has also come in. So his mm-hmm. part is looking at the Asia expansion and Australasia all the way out that way, and bring us some regions there.
Where are your customers? How geographically spread are your customers now?
Mostly UK,
but not
we have
all.
some in the US.
Yes,
And we have a couple elsewhere. But,
okay,
but the part of the goal is to focus on places like Australia.
Yes,
all
English speaking at the moment.
At the moment, also it's all English speaking, but we have the potential to offer any language actually.
Yeah,
and we have a project that it's quite far advanced in planning, which is looking at China, which is very interesting. and looking at China, but looking at Chinese coming out of China to travel elsewhere in the world and supporting them on their journey.
Okay.
So our clients would be non-Chinese companies, would be yeah, international companies.
Interesting, very interesting.
But their target, because the volume of Chinese visitors coming out China.
It's high.
It's massive.
Yes, I've seen this.
Massive. Yeah. Absolutely. And you go to Bicester Village and you...
Yeah, this is very true.
And you'll see
I think the entire expansion at Birmingham Airport, just a few hundred yards from where we're sat right now, has all been predicated on the back of this significant increase in flights to China from Birmingham, which they come and they're coming out. But so you're now funded what do you envisage? I know this second round has been fairly recently.
Yeah.
So are you set now for months, years?
Well, we have a regular shareholders and advisory panel meeting, and the last one was actually on Friday, just gone. So by the time you listen to this, it was a couple of months ago, and we would have met again.
You're catching on.
The timelines are a bit messed up here. But anyway, the debate around the table for part of the time was, well, do we need to go for a big round?
Yes.
Yeah, because our goal is to exit in 2 years.
Right, okay.
And the verdict at the end was probably we don't.
Okay.
Because if we get it right, we're bringing in the right types of business, the right types of clients, we're very highly cash generative.
Mm.
You know, the margin is strong.
Yes.
Providing
you've got the right clients.
Provided we've got the right clients. Now, this then also actually presents us with a dilemma, because one of the guiding principles behind what I wanted to do with Yondl was to create a business that enabled the small guy to compete on an equal footing with the big guy.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
You know, why should it just be the O2s and the et cetera who can have these kind of...
Well, and this is why there's such a good synergy between what Yondl's doing and what EC's doing. Because to some extent, that's part of EC's vision as well, because we want to put the knowledge and the skills in the hands of the little guy that the big guys have got. So there's, we share kind of that part of our kind of vision, if you like.
Mm. So I feel quite strongly that I want to be able to continue offering the services to the small guys.
Yes.
Although sometimes they can be very time-consuming.
Yes,
to manage.
And you'll have to be discerning in that regard, won't you?
Yeah.
Because
it gets harder.
And as you start to progress, you'll need to become more discerning. You just will, won't you? Because you'll support the small guy, providing they play ball.
Well, exactly. I mean, if people start falling in arrears and it starts getting a bit sticky, especially when it's not very much money at the end of the day.
I get that.
But it's all part of the development of the company. And as you go, I'm sure you've obviously been through all of this and you know this stuff. But it's you get to the point where the starting point, you never say no.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in the beginning.
Because acquiring, get it and then work out what to do.
Yes.
But you've got confidence you can do it. But then you end up in a situation where you start to push back a little bit.
Yes.
And then you get to the next phase, which is where you start saying no.
Mm-hmm.
And we're now at that next phase, which is where we start to say no. Yeah. I don't like saying no.
No, sure.
But it's very important.
Yeah, it is very important.
To protect the business.
Yes, and you need the clients. You were telling me earlier on before we started recording this about the client you just signed up on the way up today, which is a client that's going to be worth £25,000 a year to you as a business.
Right.
That's a good client.
Indeed.
Whereas a client that's going to be worth £500 a year, you know, still some might still be okay, but actually, you know, you need to achieve your goals, and indeed to get Yondl where it's capable of getting, you need the clients that are the right kind of magnitude and the right balance. And that, again, is something that so many businesses... And so many business owners, they never kind of get to this stage, Andy, because they never get beyond the saying yes to everything and taking it on, and they haven't got the capital sorted out, so they haven't got the cash, so they're still chasing every penny that they can get. So, they're like, I always think about Wallace and Gromit, you know, when he's laying the track off the train as the train's going along, and you've had the kind of wisdom and foresight to whilst you've done that at times, we all have.
Mm.
That the purpose of the funding rounds have been to stop that, so at least you can then look up and see where the track's going and where it's heading.
Indeed, I think that's a really important point. But I think also you gain in confidence.
Yes.
You know, it's not just Yondl saying we do this.
Mm-hmm.
It's our customers saying they do this.
Okay.
It's the testimonials coming back from our customers vouching for us.
Yes.
Saying, you know what, these guys are, you know, I'll give you an example. Last week we work with Close Brothers Invoice Finance, part of the Close Brothers Merchant Bank.
Yes.
and I had a review with them last week, a couple of months ago, by the time you listen to this. Still there, still with
we
you.
May have overdone still it. Still with you. We may have overdone
that's
it.
The last reference, yes. That's the last reference. That's the last reference. Just say recently.
Yes.
And we reviewed the service. So just in August, Yomdor provided 37% of all of the inquiries for new business that they received.
Wow. Okay. Over a third.
Yeah, over a third.
Okay.
So they've got all their other acquisition channels that, yes. that they've got going on out there.
Yeah, yeah. But
that's not the most remarkable thing. The most remarkable thing is that 37% of new business inquiries came from 1.6% of their website visitors.
Goodness, yeah. Okay, but I can get that. When you think that through, so 1.6%...
of website visitors.
...engage with the live chat.
Yeah.
So 1.6, so that's 1.5 in 100.
Yeah.
So...
And that generated 37% of all of their inquiries.
Yeah, because what it did is it kind of, flushed out, but it identified the hottest prospects, essentially, and nurtured them properly through the live chat conversation and delivered them as
pre-qualified inquiries.
And that's the power, because, you know, for all of us in business, our ability, I got Andy on here today. This is not about promoting Yomdor. I just thought it's a genuinely interesting story of a business that's had a beginning, you know, not that long ago, has come through a number of different challenges, and it's just an interesting story that I thought would be worth kind of telling. But coming through it are a number of lessons, and I think for all of us as marketers, our ability to engage with our potential customers is going to be right at the core Absolutely. Of all our growth and our success. And in an ever, you talked about the democratization of kind of business, and you know, our ability to actually engage, whether that is on the telephone, whether it's face to face, whether it's by live chat, is going to be, I think a key factor for all of us going forward. There are other players getting into your marketplace.
There are lots
of providers of live chat, but not that many providers of the actual kind of serviced live chat where they actually do what you do.
There are a few that are emerging now, and actually our position is that we welcome competition.
Well, because there's kind of rising tide kind of floats all boats.
That's right. I mean, there's so much to go around.
Yes.
It doesn't really matter that there's other businesses out there. It validates what we do. Yes. There's a demand for it. That's a very good thing. But our goal has to be, of course, to stay one step ahead, to be different. They're all called the chat something or other.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. We're called Yomdor.
Yeah.
Yomdel.
Ah,
we're only in Birmingham, Nigel. You're not far enough north to say that. but we have a name like that for a very specific reason, which is that we don't want to be pigeonholed in just doing one thing.
Yeah, okay.
Because part of the thinking behind the name as well was to create something which could in time become a noun or a verb.
Okay.
To Yomdor, a Yomdor. Mm-hmm. And the idea of creating something which could have other things associated with it, like quality, like a kite mark. You know?
Yes.
This is aspirational stuff.
Very nice.
Aspirational stuff. It would be arrogant to assume that we've got anywhere near
that. No, I understand.
There. But it's all part of the aspiration. And so as part of what we're doing now with Yomdor, we're also developing other services, complementary services.
Uh-huh.
So we've developed this one service, which is just absolutely storming.
I love this.
Absolutely Go storming.
We are running out of time.
Okay.
So briefly.
Yomdor Live Connect takes people, you've got a lead.
Yomdor Live Connect. Okay, so someone's on a website.
They've chatted.
Okay.
They've left a lead.
Yes.
So they've done all the stuff.
Yes.
It's in hours.
Yes.
So there's someone from the sales team of the client somewhere.
That's right. Okay, so this is, when you say in hours, you mean it's...
business hours.
Yes, the business has got some staff there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and what your guys are able to do
instead of saying to the person at the end, when is it convenient to speak to you?
Mm-hmm.
We say to them, would you like to speak to someone now? Take them straight from chat. They say yes, take them straight from chat, through to the sales team, give the sales guy all of the information they need.
Brilliant.
The person in chat is kept live by, your phone is going to ring in a minute.
Yeah.
Their phone rings. One of our team in Billingshurst patches the two together.
Yeah,
and the conversion rate has gone through the roof.
It will do, because people will be like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So I'm online in live chat and they just rung me up.
I'm ready. I'm ready to find out more. So one of our clients, which is a car leasing business from Yomdo Live Connect, is closing the business on 31% of all of the calls that are coming through on that channel.
And again, because of course the calls that are coming through from this route are they're hot to trot, they're good to go, they're wanting to buy and
they've chatted for 10-12 minutes, they've given all this information. So that's just one example. There are other things that we're also doing to just look at the kind of the environment around chat and what else can we do to make communication and the ability to engage with people more sticky,
fascinating,
more choice, and more results.
Well, do you know what? It hasn't been, I'll be honest, there's been less laughs on this podcast than normal. You know, and if I'm booking you again for your comedy value, you might struggle to get on. But in terms of substance and interest and fascination, Andy, it's been a great pleasure. And I feel sure that everyone listening to this will have got, you know, insights and nuggets, and certainly had a great story. So thank you very much indeed for taking your time out in September to help me on the November podcast. Andy Solomon, Yomdal. People want to get in touch, Andy, just quickly, where can they go?
They can go to yomdal.com, Yomdel.com. Our new website will be launching in a couple of weeks.
Ooh, really?
Well, by the time you hear this, the new website will be there, actually.
Mm-hmm. And so, a special site for Yorkshire people, which is yomdel.com. Just a double L on the end, just flattens it. That's not true, by the way. He's just kicked me. Andy, thanks very much for coming. And we are back next month with a special pre-festive Christmas podcast. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thanks, Nigel.
You've been listening to The Podcast from the Entrepreneur's Circle, featuring Nigel Bottrell. The Podcast is copyright Entrepreneur's Circle 2015.